It was wonderfully perplexing experience, he told his envious crew. While marveling at the stars and in a state of bliss, the alien that had summoned Tim to the ship made his approach. The being announced his arrival telepathically before appearing, to minimize the shock on Tim. Tim remained relaxed. What helped Tim keep his composure was the fact that the alien revealed to him the many previous encounters he had with the extraterrestrials. The alien triggered something in Tim's memory that unlocked a parallel life he never suspected existed. Tim had known the aliens since childhood. Mixed in with mind-expanding experiences and the joyful reunion of past memories were horrific and disturbing revelations as well, but Tim did not elaborate. Tim fought hard to remain calm as he became more aware of his dance through life with these strange creatures. He was grateful for the telepathic mode of communication because it kept his voice from breaking and his teeth from chattering had he been expected to verbalize his thoughts. That lack of control bugged him. He was proud of his fearlessness throughout his life, and few things scared him in life. As did that alien encounter. Tim, as is true for many humans, falsely believes that control resides with them, each of us, but he learned differently that day. That encounter proved to him the absolute fantasy of that belief. The next day, Tim briefed the committee about his contact with the aliens. The aliens assigned him a task, which involved four of the committee members entering into the Frankenstein bodies. They were instructed to go to a house located in one of the suburbs of a large city not far from the base. The name of the city was deleted from the report. For the assignment, they used a van disguised with a phone company logo and equipped to carry certain alien gadgets from the alien craft. There was no list given to Tim by the aliens on what he needed to take on the mission. The aliens told Tim that he would intuitively know what to bring on their mission when he entered the craft. Tim informed the members that they did not need to worry about using the equipment to transfer themselves out of their bodies and into the Frankenstein ones. The aliens would do the transfer incognito and monitor Tim's crew while they ventured off the base. Once again, the committee members were miffed for being excluded from direct contact with the aliens. They were in deep concerning the alien phenomena, and if Bill and Tim could handle it, why not the rest of them? Full disclosure could not be any more horrific than the living dead bodies they stored in the ship, or any weirder than the alien gadgets that had maimed some of them. Two of the military guys on the committee had seen the aliens when the Air Force first came in possession of the craft back in 1947. Although, they only saw them from behind thick glass and for a brief moment before the aliens were whisked away by another secret government agency. Tim actually had an answer for his colleagues. He told them that the aliens only showed themselves to humans that had gone through a series of preparations. It was a process similar to human inoculations that are given periodically to increase immunity from viruses or other contagions. The committee members wishing contact needed to have their shots before they were allowed further awareness and alien contact. If the series of inoculations, alien encounters, are successful, the aliens place that individual into a higher category. That category determines if and to what extent a human can participate with the aliens. There are hundreds of such programs where humans participate and do jobs for the aliens. But only a fraction of humans get to the stage that Bill and Tim operate with full disclosure. The aliens themselves don't know with certainty which humans will emerge from the immunization process, and if they do, at what level they will be placed in the program. Therefore, who in the committee, if anyone, would be next to cross that threshold was anyone's guess. Tim was told that the inoculations, for lack of a better word, were to protect the minds of the humans and to a lesser degree the physical bodies. The aliens emitted energy that could damage human tissue and impede the human psyche. In some cases, the energy the aliens radiated triggered psychosis in humans. There were other elements of their aliens and their craft that were harmful to humans, but the aliens did not disclose them to Tim. Next headline, primed for a mission. The aliens told Tim that his three colleagues who were previously primed for the bodies were on the craft the same night that he was taken. During the abductions, The aliens helped the three men get over their fear of the assignment they were prepped to carry out. Tim and his crew entered the bodies and then loaded up the van and headed to their destination. Tim was the only one with the knowledge of where they were going. It was a 4-hour drive from the base. They made 2 stops before they arrived at their destination. Although they did not require food or bathroom breaks, the aliens told Tim that they could eat and that the bodies functioned normally. After all, they were human bodies. Part of the experiment included mingling in public so that they could become comfortable with the bodies. After they arrived in the town of their destination, they rented a room at a motel. The next day they toured the city. The details of the mission were revealed to Tim during that day. This was a covert operation within a covert operation. The committee members who remained at the base and their superiors had no idea where Tim and the other 3 members were going or what it was they were going to do when they got there. All the committee members, as well as everyone involved with the program, had a chip embedded under their skin. That chip was the main key to keeping track of all personnel in the department. However, their bodies that Tim and the other 3 men inhabited had no such tracking devices embedded into them. It dawned on Tim that he and his crew were free from the watchful eye of his department for the first time in many years. There was no cleanup crew following them around other than the aliens, and they were free to do anything they desired. If Tim and crew messed up, or were involved in an accident, car or otherwise, the aliens would remove them from the scene in a split second with the added benefit of not having to kill them. Tim was told to familiarize himself with the streets and alleys that intersected with the house that they were to enter later that evening. It was daylight when they located the house. That gave themselves enough time to make plans on how they would carry out their objective without attracting attention. Working while inside the borrowed bodies was an incredible experience. The bodies did not require sleep or food and yet remained at optimum energy levels. As the 4 of them talked telepathically amongst themselves, the only regrets that any of them had was that they could not keep the bodies they were using. While in them they felt no pain, no fatigue and had no nagging desires for any earthly stimulants such as sex, drinking or smoking. Even those that smoked did not crave cigarettes. It was absolute freedom from the physical demands that human bodies impose on us. Later that evening, even though none of them knew what their mission was, they headed to their assignment. It was 3 o'clock a.m., when their van pulled into the driveway of the targeted house. The neighborhood was quiet, and most people were sleeping. The moon was full, the sky clear, and dogs barked in the adjacent yard. They took care not to make any additional sounds but did not interfere with the dogs and let them bark. They entered the house through the wall nearest to the driveway. Tim led the way. Somehow he knew which room inside of the house they were supposed to go to. Tim led them up the stairs, then entered the second bedroom that he came to. Tim instructed 2 of his cohorts to stay in the hall and watch for any occupants who might wake up and get out of bed. If anyone did leave their bedroom, it was the crew's job to stun the inhabitants with the alien wand and then put them back to bed. The 4 of them wore special shoes that were made of a sound-absorbing material that muffled creaking floorboards. The men communicated telepathically and made no sounds during the home invasion. Inside the room that Tim had entered was a young boy who had recently celebrated his first birthday. He was sleeping peacefully. Tim's job was to place a small object into his nose and one into his ear. Because it was a painful procedure, time had to paralyze the boy first. Tim knew that when he inserted the objects that the boy would awake and start screaming. While paralyzed, the boy would wake up, but be unable to scream or cry regardless of the pain. The boy did wake up but fell back to a sound sleep shortly after Tim completed the procedure, which took less than 2 minutes. Because of the boy's young age, they didn't have to administer amnesia to him. It was revealed to Tim during that procedure via a hidden memory that some humans were prone to develop something akin to an allergic reaction when they come in contact with aliens. When the aliens identify a human they are interested in that have such sensitivity, they enlist the help of humans like Tim, to provide a buffer as Tim was doing with that boy. By having humans make the first contact and inserting an alien antihistamine into the human's body, The aliens are free to come into contact with those individuals without causing them damage. The aliens have employed humans as intermediaries for thousands of years. Most people who are abducted do not need that procedure, but those requiring it number in the thousands. Seconds after Tim made the implants, three aliens appeared in the room. Tim had a feeling they might drop in. Nevertheless, it caught him off guard. There was no rehearsal for what took place, no plans or blueprints. Everything seemed to happen spontaneously. It was the best security system in the galaxy. No one could leak information because there was no information to get leaked. Tim received information telepathically, and it came to him at the very last moment that he required it. Although he felt that the aliens might show up, it was not part of the information that he was given. It was more like a hunch. Tim knew that the moment the aliens showed up that his job was completed and that he and his companions needed to leave the area immediately. Tim did not know what took place in the boys' room after the aliens entered and he and his crew departed. He assumed that the aliens took the boy to their spaceship where he experienced his first of many more to come, abductions. On the way back to the base, Tim told his three companions that the aliens appeared in the room as they were leaving. He asked them if any of them were aware in any way that the aliens showed up. None of them picked up on the aliens' energy vibrations, nor were they aware of the aliens at all. Back on the base, the discussion centered on their borrowed bodies and how they wished they could keep them. What they had accomplished on their mission was not talked about and was treated as if it never happened. None of them wanted to re-enter their own bodies. It was like giving up a finely tuned racing machine and going back to the old worn-out family station wagon. It took time for them to readjust to their old bodies. The fatigue, the muscle aches, hunger pangs, and they needed their coffee breaks back. During the mission, their bodies were kept in the incubator room attached to a system that was similar to cryonics that suspended bodily functions. Tim asked the aliens what the drawbacks were if a human remained inside the alien-modified human body for a month or more. They told him that if he or any human remain inside those bodies more than a few days, the return to their own body would be devastating. Tim was told that it was not permissible for them to permanently move into a resurrected dead body, neither could they be fitted with an alien organ device. The reasons were simple. Earth would be utopia if such things were allowed. Tuning Earth into Utopia was not on the aliens' schedule. Whether it ever would be in the future was not for them to disclose. Next headline, clones. Tim asked the aliens about clones and whether the aliens clone people. They told him that there are many clones on this planet. Aliens that take human form are not using the empty shells of expired humans, they use human clones. They clone from cells taken from abducted humans like Bill and Tim. Tim told them that he's never run into a copy of himself and was not sure how he would react if he did. The aliens reassured him that since there is over 6 billion people on this planet, that his chances of running into himself were slim to none. The aliens divulged to Tim in what capacities the clones were used. They showed him how one alien was able to operate several clones at the same time using mind control. Each clone could be made to perform a separate task, or work in unison like robots. Clones were used as laborers to do mundane and dangerous work, digging trenches, building functional infrastructure for villages, or working in or around nuclear and other exotic sources of energy that aliens use for a host of reasons. The aliens used clones for warfare and as formidable armies, especially in ancient times, but also in modern times. Because the clones look and act like the indigenous humans, the aliens are able to place them anywhere in the world without anyone taking notice. The clones are neither robots nor humans, they have no soul and they can't function on their own. Souls can be inserted into clones, but that is not a common practice. There. Clones are under the influence and guidance of one or more aliens who act as shepherds for the flock, or commanders over an army. The clones could be used and made to function like robots, but it's simpler to use humans with full mental capacity for jobs that require more than a zombie. Humans are brought into the program just as Bill and Tim were, because they can function on their own, and if need be, at the discretion of the aliens. During a subsequent encounter, Tim learned a little more about the aliens and was shown some of them. The primary aliens, those on the front line of human contact, were asexual. Among them there are beings that looked as if they fit one sex or the other, but it was not made clear to Tim if they were functioning as sexual beings or if it was only window dressing. Some aliens looked like they were a patchwork of spare parts, real examples of the mythological human Frankenstein. There were short, tall, fat and skinny aliens. Some were pale, grey, black, blue, and metallic in color. The various aliens walked, flew, hovered and were capable of outlandish calisthenics. There were humanoids that had human features and were hybrids, human, alien. Some aliens looked exactly like humans but they never communicated with Tim, therefore he was not sure if they were human or alien. The aliens told Tim that they are one of many different types of extraterrestrial species visiting Earth. There are layers of other aliens that are above them and below them in rank, all with their own special tasks to carry out on this planet and throughout the solar system. Next headline, back from Utopia. Bill returned from his 2-month hiatus and found the committee swamped with material they received from Tim's alien encounters. The committee was busy interpreting and categorizing Tim's work and had forgotten that Bill was on leave. However, Bill was not out of the loop as some had believed. Bill was kept up to date of Tim's evolving status with the aliens. He even had an active part in engineering it while he was away. He gave the committee plenty of time to assimilate the new data from Tim before burdening them with more from his enlightenment of the past month. He told them that he needed to spend time with his family and would return after a vacation with his family. His 2 children were in college and he spent a weekend with them. Then he and his wife went on ocean cruise. He never divulged exactly what he did at work to his wife, and curiously, she never pried into his business affairs. She was a petite, shy woman who kept to herself most of the time and did volunteer work at the local hospital. Her and Bill were exact opposites. He was outgoing and loved to mingle at parties. She preferred to stay home and read or do needlework. However, Bill had changed after his encounters with the aliens. Bill was no longer the extrovert he once was. He was pensive and more relaxed about life and shunned away from social events and other public gatherings. He stopped going to many of the important meetings. He was invited to by the committee. There was nothing he could learn from the committee and few things he could share with them, so he spent more time at home. At the work when he did show up, he only spoke when he had something to convey to the committee. The rest of the time he sat quietly and pretended to listen to the other members who were speaking. There was no more idle chat from him, something his trusted colleagues missed, because he was the one with all the good jokes and juicy stories. Bill discovered that storytelling was a double-edged sword. His reputation for telling tall tales in the past cost him some credibility in his early years with the program, and some colleagues remained critical of his alien contact claims. Even though he was a kidder, his friends and colleagues had a deep respect for him. His knowledge and ability to grasp and understand complicated concepts astonished everyone who knew him. He was talkative most of his adult life and only changed after his first few contacts with the aliens. His personality changed drastically after that, and his knowledge seemed to quadruple every day. His colleagues nicknamed him Spock, after the Star Trek character. Unlike Spock, Bill showed compassion for all people, especially for those who came in contact with him, but he did maintain a strictly business mentality. Bill's wife told him that while he was away she did not miss him at all. She was not being sarcastic. She said she felt his presence the whole time he was gone. It was as if he never left. Bill could not tell her that she was with him the whole time. An alien hybrid had taken on her looks and personality and was left in her place. Because she rarely visited with anyone, it was not a challenging problem. Bill asked the aliens if he could take her along with him, and they had one condition: that she would not be allowed to remember and that Bill could not tell her that they went on a journey together to another planet. Bill agreed, although he would have preferred that this trip be the vacation of a lifetime for the two of them. It was more important that his wife be with him and not home alone. While they were on their earthly vacation, Bill's wife told him about a strange dream she had while he was away. She told him that they were at a weird and wonderful place, just the two of them, the kids were not with them. It was like another planet, she knew that because it had more than one sun. The planet had three suns, all different sizes. One sun was a little bigger than the sun the Earth rotates around, the other two were much smaller but brighter than a full moon. 12 moons circled the planet, each one a different color and size. The moons were inhabited with vast cities and millions of magnificent buildings. Some large enough to be visible from the planet, and people could travel without much effort to any of the moons. And she and Bill did. The cities she saw can only exist in dreams, their beauty surpassed reality, she told Bill. The cities sparkled like diamonds, the streets like emeralds. The food was heavenly and it was the first time she remembered taste and smells from a dream. Like the cities, the food was incredibly delicious, it had to be a dream. Food isn't that good on this planet. She wished she could share that dream with him. It was so hard to describe how wonderful it made her feel. Had she not known better, she'd swear it was real and not a dream. Bill was surprised how much they allowed her to remember about the trip she was not aware she went on. He thought that the aliens were going to mask what had taken place with something that fit more into the earthly mode of dreams. He was pleased that they gave her that gift. It turned out as he wished, they got their fantasy vacation after all. Nevertheless, they blocked much of what she experienced, otherwise her ability to live a normal life on this planet would be difficult. Some activities were so fantastic that both Bill and his wife had to be sedated to keep their senses from overloading. They had to wear special bodies that were suited to the alien environment. Bill and his wife's bodies remained on a ship back in Earth's solar system. Night and day occurred on certain moons but was nothing like on Earth. The planet they visited had mostly sunny days due to the three stars. Each moon was a unique wonderland of adventure. One moon was a botanical marvel with thousands of acres of lush rainforest harboring numerous species of orchids and various exotic plants and flowers. Some moons were like theme parks, others year-round winter wonderlands with ski slopes and other wintertime activities. Other moons hosted zoological parks with millions of animal groups in natural habitats. Water worlds, or more appropriately, water moons, sported endless miles of pristine beaches and every kind of water sport, including deep sea exploration that would make Jacques Cousteau blush with envy. Endless entertainment was available to all members of that planet and the other planets in that solar system. The moons were not the same size, but many of them were as large as the Earth. The planet itself was enormous, bigger than Jupiter. Bill was forbidden to reveal these experiences to anyone other than the committee. The aliens were not afraid that Bill would leak out damaging information about them to the general public, or to his wife. They were concerned that Bill would look foolish to his wife and his friends if he revealed even a small portion of what he was shown. He had the discipline to keep from telling the general public, but it took extraordinary discipline to keep certain secrets from family and friends. The most difficult time for Bill came when the aliens took his own daughter and she woke up with her nose bleeding. He knew what happened to her and what she had been put through, but he had to make up a story about what might have caused her nose bleeding. When he was young, his parents told him it was something that happened to most children, and that's what he told to his daughter. His daughter was 12 when he came to know the aliens personally. He was present at one of her abductions and asked not to be invited to any more of them. It was difficult enough for him to watch someone else's child crying during some of the procedures and unable to console them. It was completely unbearable to watch his own child, especially when she looked up at him and cried, "Help me, Daddy," and he could do nothing but observe. Bill understood some of the things that took place and why. The things he didn't understand were the most painful. If Bill woke up one day and discovered that the aliens were doing evil things to him and his family, it would not matter. There is no way he could turn them off. The whole of the United States military or of the world cannot stop or hinder the aliens in any way. He was glad that down deep inside he believed the aliens to be good and worked willingly with them. But he did have a twinge of suspicion in the back of his mind. He never felt like he was a slave to the aliens, but because they were able to implant any reality into his mind, he was never completely sure of their true intentions. The aliens understood his suspicions and told him that his ability to be suspicious of them was proof that they did not have absolute control over him. If they did, they could easily mask over any doubts in his mind. Instead, since the aliens have the upper hand anyway, they are able to work with humans without glossing over all feelings of mistrust humans will have. Few humans are able to work with the aliens in the capacity that Bill and Dim did. The aliens go through an extensive process of elimination before they find a human they can divulge themselves to. Bill met others like himself while visiting the other planet. Not all of them were from Earth. Many who were not from Earth nevertheless shared similar characteristics as humans because they were from the same gene pool. Bill only met with 7 who were from other planets. The 7 represented 2 planets that were exact duplicates of Earth. There are billions of planets that are similar to Earth in the Milky Way galaxy, and there are billions of planets that are significantly different from Earth. Since the planets that are different had no relevance for Bill and the others he was with, they were not discussed. One of the highlights for Bill and their others with him was when an alien triggered a universal language in them. It was the first demonstration the aliens did for them, and it took place while he was with the first group, the group of 7 Bill called them. The first meeting was held in a magnificent courtyard somewhere in the main city. The alien spoke a single word to them. That word was an access code that triggered something inside of the brains of Bill and those with him. Once the alien spoke the word, a small area of the brain that was previously dormant in all 7 of them was activated. At that instant, they all began to talk to each other with the same language with ease. Bill was surprised to find out that there were 12 others like him from planet Earth. The 12 were in the second group that his first group merged with. Bill and the committee members had theorized earlier in the program that there had to be other countries on Earth with alien spacecraft and technology, but had no evidence of it. Bill was one of 2 Earthlings that spoke English. The aliens triggered that same language module in the larger group. One of the humans at the meeting asked the alien guide if they, the participants, could access this part of the human brain on their own once they returned to Earth. The alien told them they could not. It was not a language that was currently being spoken on Earth, although it was spoken on Earth thousands of years ago. Those from Earth like Bill were not there to share with each other what they did back on the planet Earth concerning secret programs. The intention of that particular visit was to broaden awareness among the members, and to learn a little more of what is involved in being a human in the galaxy. Bill, as did some of the others from Earth, expressed their feelings to the aliens that much was shown to them but little was given to them to understand. The aliens responded that not only do many levels of aliens exist, but so do many levels of human awareness. The understanding that any one human achieves depends on the level he or she is at. That alone determines what they can comprehend and keep for themselves when they leave and return to their planets. On Earth there are 7 levels. On other planets the range was in the hundreds of higher levels. The level a person obtained is not determined by intelligence alone, but comes from deep inside the soul. It was not for the aliens to elaborate on what that mysterious substance was. It was something that had to be determined by each individual. 2 out of the 12 humans at that convention were at level 7. Bill was not one of them. The rest had achieved the rank of level 5 or 6. Who was at what level was not disclosed. Humans would only know their level after they had expired. That was all that the aliens would to tell them. Once they returned to Earth, it was unlikely that Bill would see or meet any of the 11 people again. Throughout history, aliens recruited humans to do work for them. Bill and the others were the newest members of that fraternity. One of the things revealed to Bill at the convention was that not all aliens are benevolent. Some were evil and spend their time interfering with humanity. Bill was told that the craft he and the committee had in their possession was not damaged in an accident. It had been attacked by one of the ships belonging to the Renegade. Aliens.